It's Tuesday, the 24th of October, 2023, but look, let's face it, it could be any time at all.
Yeah.
Because I'm here in company with my two mates, Tony Martin.
Yes.
Aged?
59 at this
59 point. 59-year-old Tony. The boy comedian, Jovan Caro.
I believe it's Comedy Boy.
Comedy Boy, I beg your pardon.
Yeah. How old are you?
I'm 34.
Wow. 34.
So
and
young.
Pete Smith here. In the box seat at 84.
Wow. Yeah.
And closest to the door so they can get the body out of here quickly if necessary. That Pete, sounds a bit macabre. I'm sorry to start off on a down note like that.
In the last episode, you were pointing out that I was making ageist jokes about yourself. And I realise why I'm doing that, Pete. It's because in normal life, I'm that guy.
I've got to tell you, I pull the age thing all the time.
Do
oh,
you?
Hello. Look, I'm 84,
yeah, right.
And I just cannot get this thing to connect. You know, I use it on a daily basis.
Jesus. Do you remember Lois Ramsey?
Oh, very much so, yes.
She was in the film Cracker Jack, and she's the woman who goes, "Swear jar." And I said to her one day, "How old are you?" And I can't remember the exact figures, but she goes, "Well, Tony, I'll tell you now, I'm 86, but I do pretend to be 96 because it gets more sympathy."
Yeah.
So I'm going, well, that's interesting. So normally actresses lie about their ages downwards. But then it comes a time where it's more advantageous to go the other way.
Oh, very much so. And look, I use it all the time. And why not? Because, you know, I play golf regularly or try to play
That's
golf.
That's what I've heard.
I'm a bad handicapper. I'm 36, which is the highest you
can
get.
I don't know what
that means. You can't get any worse than that.
Right.
But there's a guy there, two guys, in fact, at the club who are 90
really?
And play in 34 or 35 degree heat and walk the course.
Yeah.
And that's about... Well, in my case, it's about 6 kilometres, but for me, zigzagging, it's 9 kilometres.
That's good fitness, though.
Wow. So I admire them very much indeed. And why not shout that you're 90 if you can do that sort of thing?
Well, aside from tech connection issues, is there any other excuse you use it for? I mean, we're sort of calling you out now, but...
I use it on a daily basis, just about everything.
I can't pay for my coffee. That kind of thing?
No, I don't go that far.
You know, we haven't mentioned your dad before, the late Les Smith. How old was he when he...
He was 105 and 3 months when he finally...
That's right.
...decided himself that he'd no longer want to be around, and he had a bit of a fall in his bedroom.
Yeah.
Didn't do any damage, didn't hit anything, but was taken off to hospital for an examination, and I think he just decided that was enough for him.
Although I do remember saying to you, you know, how was he? Towards the end, and you, I remember one time you said, he's perfectly fine up to 104.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And, of course, the golf was the thing that kept him alive. There's no doubt about that.
That's right.
Getting back to golf, which would be foreign to most of your listeners who don't play golf. It could be very boring.
But believe me,
it was a passion with my father.
I remember that.
Yeah, and he went up to Eastern Golf Club, which relocated from Doncaster in Melbourne to Yering, which is up in the on the Dandenong Hills sort of area.
It's
Yarra
not easy
Valley.
To relocate a golf course, by the way, but they did it.
Yeah. And finally, even though he wasn't playing golf, he'd go up in a cab twice a week to sit there and have a coffee. And the last time I was up there with him, I said to him, look at those beautiful hills, the Christmas hills, as they're called up there, the back of Lilydale. And I said, aren't they superb? This wonderful new golf course they've built. Greg Norman designed it.
Right.
And Dad hit the first golf ball up there as a with Greg when he arrived by helicopter. So that was a real thrill for him. Anyway, I said, look at that beautiful view, Dad. And he said, I've never seen it.
No.
Because by that time... He was clinically blind.
That's right. But I do remember saying to you.
Sorry, I think Pete is the only person that can get away with casually saying when he arrived by helicopter. It's just a normal conversation.
That's right. I remember one day saying to you about Les, I said, how's his golf game? And you said, well, he's legally blind, but he's out there having a hit 3 times a week.
That's right. And the guys he played with, you talk about friendship, they would find where the ball went.
Oh, yeah.
Relocate the ball.
Oh, Donald Trump style.
Yeah, he'd line up and hit it, you know. Yeah, but there would be no tantrums like Donald Trump.
Do you think that's the key, though? I mean, maybe Tony and I should take up golfing so we can get into our hundreds.
I've had a go. I can't remember who dragged me out onto a golf course, but it was only about an hour in when I started to hear the word unco being thrown at me.
Right.
Believe you me, there are more words than that spoken on it. It's got to be the most frustrating game ever invented, because at least with tennis, you can go out for an hour or so and have a bit of fun. Okay, so you don't hit the ball properly, you just pick it up and play again. Right. But with golf, there's no retreat. Okay. You've got to keep going. Have you noticed that here in the podcast studio, there is a fourth member?
Obviously, are we filming this, Jovan? There's some kind of camera set up in here.
Yeah, there is.
We have a guest here, folks.
We've never had a guest on from The Hideout before.
No, but in the last episode, I said that Palais Pete, my ventriloquist doll, would like to come in.
Yeah, but that isn't Palais Pete, though, is it?
This is not Palais Pete. And, folks, we've got the ventriloquist doll sitting here alongside me.
Can you tell from the shoes,
the microphone,
Tony?
Yes, but unfortunately, I've got a bag over his head.
Yeah, it does look like he's involved in a hostage video at this point.
I was wondering how he was testing levels without looking at the actual console.
Well, without making light of it, yes, he does look a bit like a hostage, but, in fact, Mervyn is quite used to this. Mervyn Purvis, I'm sorry.
Oh, Mervyn Purvis is with us.
I may as well introduce
you. Here we go. The bag's coming off.
Oh. This is Mervyn Purvis.
Oh, God. He's very pink in the face, I'll say that. Oh, hang on. He's being hoisted over onto Pete's knee.
I'm going to manipulate him now for you.
Oh, he's staring right at me.
Another sentence only Pete can get away with.
Mervyn, we did say that you could come in. Palais Pete's not feeling that well, so that's why he's not here. He might come in a future time. But you're happy to be here, aren't you?
Yes.
Good. Well, now, Mervyn, I thought it might be nice. I did say to Palais Pete, you can come in but don't talk. But, Mervyn, I know that you are a fan of the old television days when Zig and Zag entertained the children.
Yes.
And I think you grew up watching that program, didn't you?
Yes.
Well, now, why don't we do a little song without taking over the podcast?
It's going to be a song.
Why don't we do just a little song together? Maybe the old Zig and Zag. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, Mervyn, you look like a singer.
You do know the song?
I think so.
All right, then. Well, we'll do it together, okay? And I'll start it off. You and me, can we be buddies? You and me, can we be friends? Now, you...
We'll be a great association.
Please and use the job I'm given. Please and you makes life worth living.
When we're wrong, we'll be forgiven as we go along.
Now, I want you to do it. We'll do it together, okay? This is the trick. We'll do it again. Just the last line together,
Mervyn.
How's
this going to work?
Together. We belong.
Hang on.
Well, wow.
How was that,
Jesus
Chief?
Christ.
There's something supernatural going on in the Hideout studios. I'm not quite sure how that was done.
Thank you, Mervyn. Would you like to just say you're listening to, you know what?
You're listening to From the Hideout.
May I make an ambient claim?
Do it.
This might be the first time a ventriloquist doll has featured in a podcast.
Oh, okay. So you're saying that we can add another first to your long list.
From the Hideout.
That you've invented the podcast, you've invented the rock video, you've started the Dixon's chain, and now a first in the world of podcasting.
Our show post is going to have like a lot of laurels, however you call them.
Absolutely.
I'm sitting here trying to think if I've worked with, aside from I mentioned in the last episode, I had an encounter with Jerry G and Ron Blaskett. But years ago when we were doing Martin Malloy, we would...
Sorry, he's touching it.
Mervyn Purvis is adjusting himself in a most disturbing manner.
Is he nodding now? Or having a stroke?
You guys know the comedian Dave O'Neill, obviously. He used to come on Martin Malloy quite regularly, and he had a job as the support act for a famous ventriloquist. And I won't name him on air because we don't want legal troubles. Obviously, we've got someone with us who can... We've got a legal advisor.
He can ring him up.
So Dave O'Neill would come on the show and regularly tell almost defamatory stories about working with this ventriloquist. I remember one time he revealed that this ventriloquist wore a toupee, which I think he thought was general knowledge.
Right.
And the guy was furious and said, I'm not having him support me again, and demanded an apology. And Dave, you know, smoothed it over. But then the very next time he came on the show, he told another story about how this ventriloquist had taken the whole crew of this comedy show out to a strip club after the show one night.
Oh, no.
And, yeah, it gets worse.
Yeah.
And they've gone into a private room.
Oh, good Lord.
And a cake has, you know, like a big wedding cake has been wheeled out. You go, someone's going to burst out of that cake. And the cake burst open and a topless woman appeared. But here's the thing. It was the ventriloquist's wife.
Oh,
goodness me.
Isn't that a strange story?
What a twist. I thought you were going to say it was the puppet that burst out.
No, no. See, that would have been great. Every time he came on to apologise for the previous story, he'd unleash another one.
Oh.
So that this was in the 1990s, by the way.
Fancy that, because people have been very sensitive about toupees, and I don't blame them. Or transplants, which I've had. No, yes. But they do get very, I mean, aside Don Lane, I've told you about Don. And, you know, Don's transplant was fantastic.
Yeah, I
so was Bert's. But you want to know something? Mervyn has also had a toupee.
Oh, you're joking.
And every now and again it malfunctions.
Oh, hello. The hair has a life of its own.
Every now and again. So he's a bit sensitive about it too. Oh, it's understandable.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, right. Sure. I do remember you showing me an article once, Pete, from the 1970s, where a whole bunch of Australian TV celebrities were jetting off to, I think, Chicago or somewhere to try this new hair technology. And what's interesting about that is... people tend to keep that to themselves now. This was like major news in the paper.
Oh, it was major news because you couldn't avoid it. Once you had the transplant and it had to be done in stages, you had to have the head completely compressed in bandages for at least 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
And so you couldn't avoid, unless you look like a mummy, you couldn't come out in public. Don, for instance.
Yes.
Jetted off to Los Angeles, it was, and he was under the care of Frank Sinatra's hair specialist.
Okay,
that's where Frank got his follicles.
Well, I worked with a guy in the 80s who was having regular visits to the US to have the transplant, and it was sort of in rows, like it was like a cornfield. Yes. But the problem is no one was allowed to refer to it, so he'd just turn up one day with that going on and often just bleeding from the head. And we were just, and you just have to have a conversation with him in the tea room and pretend it wasn't happening.
Well, I've been very lucky because not that I need it now, and I'm starting to get thin now.
Yeah.
But in the time when I was
on
television,
what are you talking
about?
No,
you can't see it, but you notice I never go out in a high wind.
I'm now expecting Pete's hair to move as the same as Mervyn.
Well, here's something. I can reveal something at this point. You can't see the top of my head. But I currently have 2 stitches in the top of my head.
Oh.
Because last Wednesday I was in the bathroom and I was bent down and I stood up suddenly and I didn't realise that the cupboard door was open and I've smashed my head and it's that thing where you go, oh, this is going to hurt. And then, ouch, it hurts. And then, oh, it's not actually that bad. And then all of a sudden blood is just waterfalling down the front of my face.
Like a scene from Psycho in the shower.
It was like a nightmare because I didn't realise – people had told me how much blood comes out of your head if you injure yourself. And so I've gone to the hospital and I'm sitting there holding my head. And then every time I take my hand away, blood starts coming out
again. Oh, so you actually had to attend the emergency.
Went to the hospital. And the problem is there's so many forms to fill out. They're just handing me clipboards. And I'm like, every time I take my hand off to turn the page of the form, more blood starts coming out. So this ends with me taking a completely bloodstained form up to the reception. And the woman's looking at it and she's going, Well, I can't read your email address. I'm going, do you need my email address to stop this?
Well, I feel like I should have something going on with my head now, but but it's only very grey at this point.
Gray?
I feel like I'm going grey for a 34-year-old. I think that's, this normal?
I think it is in comedy. Sean McAuliffe went grey at a young age. Steve Martin, Shane Bourne. There's a long history of comedians suddenly going grey.
Yeah. Yes, but you're not in that category, Jovan.
A comedian?
You are a boy comedian. And really, your hair...
Comedy
winner.
I look at you and admire your hair very... I've never said it before, but you've got such a profuse amount of hair there.
You really should
buy a violin.
Well, I have my parents to thank for that. They both have incredible hair. So my dad's quite grey, but
well, let me tell you,
I think
you
went
greyer
younger than I have.
You will never go bald.
What do you think, Mervyn?
My hair's all artificial anyway, so I don't have to worry, do I?
No, you don't.
Here today, gone tomorrow.
Thanks, Mervyn.
How do you brush your teeth, Mervyn?
With great care.
Mervyn has actually performed on some of the biggest stages in, well, certainly in Melbourne. I don't know about Australia. He was my grandfather's will to me when my granddad died. And he's performed at the old Tivoli, which was the home of vaudeville in Bourke Street in Melbourne, at the Palais St Kilda. He's appeared on the stage down there and who knows where else. If he was working today, and I think really he's got no ambition to be working, but he could be doing the nursing home circuit.
So how old is?
95.
95. Wow. So even older.
Not to be disrespectful to Marvin. Is it Marvin?
Mervyn.
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 Jeez, don't mention Marvin, Mervis.
Pete's giving me the same look as Mervyn right now. When Mervyn began his journey in show business, did he have a different voice? How did his voice develop?
I think it developed with age, the way most of our voices.
Okay.
What do you do? Wouldn't you say so, Mervyn?
Yeah.
I was really hoping Mervyn would sound exactly like Pete. Imagine Mervyn with a different voice. What would you voice Mervyn as, Tony?
I don't know.
I know this is spoiling it, Pete, but what if we
would
workshopped
like
a few
on
different voices?
Would you like him on your knee to try?
Oh, I don't know. That
might
feels
be too much to handle
that
at
feels
this time.
Possibly wrong.
But what would the voice be from Mervyn?
I don't know. Because they're always high-pitched, aren't they?
What are you talking about? It's always like this, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't have any opinions, I'm afraid.
I like to think it's a little deeper. It's a little more like Bane.
How would you treat it, Joanne?
What a lovely audience we have here tonight. Thank you so much for coming.
I love the idea.
The fire rises.
The idea of a Bane ventriloquist dummy.
Well, you could get away with it. He has the mask.
That's right.
If only Lewis had had a device like this.
We actually did have puppets in one episode with Peter Coombe was our guest on Famous with Lewis.
Oh, he's wonderful. Yeah. They were glove puppets, weren't they?
They were sock puppets, yeah.
Sock puppets,
Blueby
yes.
And I forget the other name, but Peter Coombe was still quite baffled.
When you think about ventriloquist dolls and all that, the tradition owes its beginnings, if you like, to the old British or the English Punch and Judy shows.
Oh, yeah.
And when
very
I was a
violent.
Kid of 8 or 9, my mother and father gave me a very special Christmas present, Punch and Judy characters.
Oh.
Punch, Mr. Punch himself, Judy, his girlfriend, and the judge and quite a few others.
Yeah.
And I used to do a Punch and Judy show with a stall out in the street.
Oh, so what was the audience? How many people were...
Well,
it's like rather
the
than
kids
a,
in the street would come along and sit on the grass verge.
So much the way a child might have a lemonade stand, you've got a Punch and Judy theatre out on the nature street.
In Longmore Street, West St Kilda.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that was my first foray, if you like, into showbiz.
Now, do you think Punch and Judy shows could be performed today or would they fall under the heading of domestic violence?
It does involve some violence because, of course, Punch, Mr. Punch, used to hit Judy over the head with a stick.
When I was a kid, there was a move to ban the Three Stooges, who were a comedy team who employed quite severe physical violence.
Yeah.
they were like hitting each other in the head with hammers, that sort of thing.
Well, but it extends into cartoons, of course,
that's
because
right.
that was their main staple. Look at the Roadrunner.
Yeah.
It's all violence.
I know. We were just, there was such an outbreak of people dropping anvils from the top of cliffs.
That's it.
When I was a kid.
But it's the same with movies, of course. I mean, they're all still rated.
Yes.
Although there didn't seem to be much emphasis on the rating. You go to the movies now, to the cinema, and you see a trailer, a preview.
Sure.
And at the end of it, or the start of the end of it, it says, you know, classification, check it yourself.
Yeah. It basically says, sort it out yourself.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's right. Well, see, in the 70s, I mean, I know there's always violence in films, but in the 70s, when I was growing up, most of the violence was inflicted by animals. It was constantly sharks, bees, grizzly bears, giant spiders. It was the animal kingdom that was coming for us back in the 70s.
Mm.
There's now, of course, sharks are flying now, aren't they?
Well, that lives on, of course, in things like the studio tour,
right.
which features Bruce, the shark from Jaws.
Oh, have you been on
the train ride?
Have
yes,
you
it's
been
wonderful.
On the Universal Studios
yes.
tour?
Marvellous.
When did you go, Pete? How long ago was that?
We went 10 years ago for my 70th or something and took the family.
The Red Sea parts, is that right?
Yes, the Red Sea parts as well. There's a flash flood.
Yeah.
Jaws attacks the train at one stage.
I went to Universal in 2016, and that year most of the backlot tour was Fast and Furious inspired.
Yeah.
So I saw a lot of Vin Diesel and The Rock and a lot of cars, and everyone was so excited around me, but I wasn't. I was just there for the Jurassic Park ride.
Right.
Which also felt like it had been forgotten, so a few velociraptors had missing eyes and and things like that. My favorite part of going on these theme park rides is obviously going through it and experiencing it, seeing a velociraptor jump at you, and then passing the velociraptor and just looking back a few seconds after it and then seeing the animatronic reset. That is my favorite part, watching the reset,
wow.
because it just exposes the real magic behind it all.
Yes.
Going on the Jurassic Park ride was a great talking point for me when I met Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, yes.
So it was a great in to chat to him about him again.
And what – now, obviously, if you've ever heard Jeff Goldblum on a podcast, he's a very –
like Sizzletown?
He does appear occasionally. But he's a very discursive conversationalist. He'll go in any direction. What did he talk about with you?
Well, I was quite nervous meeting him. He has this jazz band and he plays
– yes.
Tries to play monthly. And so we were lucky enough to get tickets, and it's basically the Jeff Goldblum show. He uses it as a way for people to create social media content for him.
Oh, okay.
And so I've never been this starstruck before. Sorry, Pete.
No, and very clever man. Ask Sam Neill. Sam Neill, of course, worked with him.
Yeah.
Halfway through the show, he invites everyone to take pictures with him, and my heart's just going crazy, and Christina, my wife's with me, and she's trying to settle me a little bit. And I said to him, the first thing I said to him was, I went on the Jurassic Park ride yesterday. It was a lot of fun, but the biggest thing that was missing was a mechanical you.
Right.
And he said, oh, bless your soul, bless your soul.
That's
and
a
he
lovely
gave me
line.
A
that
big
a
hug
line.
And a big squeeze. And wow. it's like he.
Jovan, that
very,
is a lovely line to do for him. And he,
no, it's a bit clunky.
He would have appreciated it.
Yeah. He sort of feeds off energies. It's really interesting. Not in a creepy way, but
no.
I guess because I've seen him be in films and admired him. It really felt like there was a real connection there. And he's like, I was in Australia not long ago and talking to me about the project.
Really?
I was on that show.
So he did the project, did he?
He did, yes. Yeah.
Back in my day, it would have been the Don Lane show, but there are so few venues now on television.
Yeah.
There's not too many shows that you can go on. You can go on The Breakfast Show, I suppose.
I wasn't going to bring this up, but you've brought it up, Pete. In the last episode, we played the famous clip of Don storming off the set of
yes.
his own show. And we also mentioned that Mitch McTaggart, man who does our theme music, has covered this story on his Backside of Television series, which you can see on Binge. Mitch actually contacted me to say that he'd done a lot of extra research that wasn't in that episode. And he discovered that that was the third time that year that Don had stormed off the set of his own show. Do you remember
third
that?
Time?
No,
do you
I do
remember
not.
The other two
no.
times?
No, I don't.
Were you holding different Jenny Craig food then?
No, I don't know what you'd be talking about.
So apparently this was a regular thing, but Mitch said that one of the articles, the contemporary articles of the time, suggested that Don was doing this deliberately to get the ratings up.
No, I can't believe that.
You can't?
No.
Pete Smith denies. Absolutely. Well, Lane claims.
I'm surprised Pete's still sitting here. I thought Pete was just about to walk out.
Yes. Yeah, I'm thinking about storming out, but then I don't know.
Please
how to...
storm out, Pete. It'll be great for our show.
No, I don't recall any of that. I've got to be honest with you.
There are some amazing clips of the Don Lane show that you're in going around. There's one, what was that one that was going around during grand final time? It was like a football song.
Oh, it's a great song, that song. You've got to be a football hero to get in love with a beautiful girl. That's not quite the right lyric, but it's that. It's great, great number, song and dance number.
And you're there, and Phil Brady,
of the original dressed as footballers.
Broody's Hideout. It's a fully choreographed musical number. That's what I miss on. Don't you just, like you mentioned the project, they're just sitting there. Couldn't they just get up and do a tap dancing number at the end? Everyone would be happy with that, wouldn't they?
Yeah, every sport deserves its own musical number.
I wonder how many people would watch the live variety of that sort of era today.
Yeah.
There's so much competition now, isn't it? Let's face it.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this many times, but my problem with the sort of variety, I guess it's variety, things like The Voice and, you know, Australian Idol, it's too slick.
Well, I don't know. I'm not privy to the behind the scenes in the production sense of those shows, but, you know, dare I say, I think maybe occasionally they edit.
Oh, I'm joking.
Oh, my, what?
Oh, goodness me, Mervyn. Don't you listen to that sort of talk.
Yeah, his jaw has just dropped.
Mervyn stormed out.
I think he's also smoking a cigar.
Yeah.
He just punched a child in the face.
It's more mugshots of the judges, isn't it?
Yeah.
Reacting.
Give me
some more reactions, please, Rita, wherever you are.
Rita. I hate that Rita.
I'd love to see Pete as a judge. Do you think you'd adopt the Dicko or the
Simon
Cowell?
I don't think I'd be qualified,
but
back in those days, you know, the New Faces days, they were simpler times.
Yes.
And I can remember when they began, you might say The Voice, yeah, they're terrific slick shows, there's no doubt about it, production values, you know, top of the class. But back in the early days of television, Kevin Dennis was a car trader, selling second-hand cars.
Sure.
And new cars too, I think. And he sponsored a program called New Faces.
Welcome to the series final of New Faces with Bert Newton. And now, here's Bert.
And it began as a Saturday morning program at about 8 o'clock in the morning. Now, the contestants would come in and they would get one run with the pianist.
Yes.
One run. With a song. And then sit down in the front row.
Yeah.
And then be called up to perform. So it was production values, no. But in entertainment, it was rough around the edges,
as so much
of that television was, but it was entertaining.
And the one I always talk about is Potluck with Ernie Sigley that was in the mid-'80s and it was filmed in Adelaide and the acts did not even get one run through. They would literally just walk in off the street, hand the music to the band leader and just go into the song and often in a completely different key and often, you know, a couple of lines late. That's what's missing with the current shows, the sense that that could happen. Because if that happened, they just stop and start again. I want to see the one where it's completely off the rails, where someone's in a wedding dressed and possibly with their arm in a cast and belting out a not even the same song that the band's playing.
Well, I can remember back in the days when Frank Wilson was doing New Faces and then Bert took over and did it successfully for so many years and we'd... The program would go to air at this particular stage, I think on a Sunday evening at 6:30. So during the afternoon, the contestants would come in. They'd have a bit of a rehearsal with there was a little band. And then Bobby Lim and I think Tim Evans were judges at the time. They would come in. But during the rehearsal time, it would be broken up with a tea break at about 5 o'clock and the contestants and all the crew could go up to the canteen at the Fun Factory, as we affectionately called it, at GDV in Melbourne. They'd go up for the little break, you know, the meal break, and then come back in. And before they came back in, at 6 o'clock, the audience would be let in And so they'd all come back in. The contestants sat in the front row of the audience. So they'd all be back in there, sitting there waiting, and they'd just be called up to perform. They weren't from a dressing room or any green rooms or any of that sort of stuff. This particular old bloke was doing a gum leaf.
Playing
a gum leaf.
Yes.
And anyway, but over the years, there were several people who played gum leaves. But this particular gentleman was sitting there on the aisle where he's told to sit, and the rest of the contestants came in and sat alongside him, and a lady there, a young lady who was singing an opera song or something.
Yeah.
That's unimportant. But anyway, she was sitting there. So then they're all sitting there and, almost having a bit of a, sleep almost, and the old boy's asleep there on his chair, and the audience is let in to sit down, and the ladies thought, well, it's nearly time, and then I came in to do the warm-up, and as I recall, she nudged him, and he fell out into the aisle. He died.
Sean, seriously?
We were short a contestant that night on a live show.
I heard he still came third. A couple of episodes ago, we played a clip from Martin Malloy from one of the albums that you appeared on. And because we bring everything up on this show, it's all out on the table. You were quite confused, Pete. There was a clip with me talking about John Travolta, and I remember you saying to me, what was that?
Yes, I wondered what that was in the middle of the
The show, because we occasionally go to clips. So I thought, well, here's something as a treat for you, Pete, to make up for that confusion. I have been into the archives and found a clip of you on Martin Malloy, which has not been heard for probably 25 years.
And you're going to play it now?
Yeah, but first, to set it up, have you heard about this business where voiceover men like yourself are having their voices sampled in order to create AI versions?
Yes, and no wonder everybody's on strike in America for the very same reason.
I know a voiceover guy, and he told me he had a job where they said, oh, while you're here, can you just read out all of these words? And what they were doing is they were stockpiling the words in order to create an AI version.
That is very scary, Tony. All jokes aside, this is happening in every endeavor, every occupation almost.
Well, what about this? Back in 1996, we predicted this exact phenomenon. Do you remember when we brought Virtual Pete onto the set of or the studio of Martin Malloy? Do you remember this?
No, but 1996,
yeah,
that was a prediction of epic proportions when you think about it now.
Back then, we were talking seriously about replacing you with a robo version of yourself. Have a listen to this.
Want to hear him loosen the larynx?
I don't know, Tone. When it comes to announcements, there's only one Pete Smith.
True, but I've recorded every word, sentence and phrase Pete has ever uttered on this show and fed it into Virtual Pete here. Let me just switch on the vocaliser. Right, now ask him a question. Virtual Pete, what did you do on the weekend?
I went sailing on my yacht.
Wow, it's uncanny. Try another one. What was the last movie you saw, Virtual Pete?
That would have been Waiting to Exhale.
Amazing.
You are way ahead of your time, Tony.
I think you'd seen Terminator 2.
Really, I've got to say that. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, Terminator was
that
out.
Is very spooky.
Okay, now let me ask you, Joffrey, do you know what Waiting to Exhale was?
No,
this
no
was
idea.
A film that was big at the time with, I think,
was it in black and white, Tony? There's my age joke for you.
I'm just gobsmacked that it's 1996, no artificial intelligence on the horizon,
no.
And you come up with that concept.
Very
well,
little
it seems Tony started the whole thing, so now you can sue him because that clearly was your voice.
Yeah.
Doing so you are really, you are the instigator of artificial intelligence.
Another first for the podcast.
That is incredible,
I'm
Tony.
I'm going to get back into the files and see what other things we predicted with Pete. Perhaps we had an OnlyFans account with Pete Smith back in 1996. I don't know.
Pete and Mervyn. Do you hear that music? We're entering
this?
The Hideout Society Lounge.
Oh, are we?
Yeah.
Oh, it's quite
how
nice.
How comfortable is it in here?
It's great here.
Everything's leather.
Yeah.
None of this pleather stuff. What do you think, Pete? The lighting's just right.
Just got to be careful not to trip. It's a beautiful atmosphere.
On the luxury carpets.
Yeah. On extremely expensive tiles.
It is very. The carpet is so thick you could walk around in your underpants. Nobody'd know.
So why are we here?
We're here to thank the Patreon subscribers for helping us out with this little show. We're busy making things for you, but this is just a little big thank you from us for subscribing. Our beige members.
Our Beaujolais members.
And
Royal Blue.
Hello.
Yes, thank you so much. Our Patreon pioneers.
There they are.
Thank you so much. Welcome to the Hideout Society. And now to take us to the end of the show, Mervyn.
You've been listening to, or have just missed, From the Hideout.
Well,
thank you, Mervyn.
And who's on the show, Mervyn? Who are the stars?
Mr. Mervyn Purvis, Tony Barton, boy comedian Jovan Caro, and me, Pete Smith, speaking. Well, Mervyn, I think you did very well. Now, I want you just to sit back in your chair, have a listen on the earphones, and just enjoy the rest of our From the Hideout podcast. Can we do it? Edit there.
Yeah, it's Mervyn coming through.
I'm sure that'll be
left live.
In.
It's live.
Enjoy the show.
Thanks. Ooh, an exclusive area.
Hold on a second, buddy. Have you got access?
Oh,
Are you a member of the Hideout Society?
Sorry, what?
It's a Patreon page designed to help the making of the show and give you access to exclusive content.
The show? What do you mean, the show?
From the Hideout, the monthly podcast you're enjoying right now.
Behind you.
Okay.
Thanks, pal. Good to see you.
How come you let him in?
Members only. He's a member.
Royal Blue.
What?
Oh, it's different subscription tiers.
There's Beige, Beaujolais, and Royal Blue.
Each grants you different levels of access to all kinds of extra goodies.
Gotcha. Look, I'll have to have a think.
You've got it. Golly, it's so fun and exclusive in here.
So how do I sign up?
Just visit patreon.com/FromTheHideout.
Okay. Done.
Welcome
to the Hideout Society.
Why, thank you.
Beaujolais?
Royal Blue.
Royal Blue! Though Beaujolais is still fun to say. Now, let me teach you the secret handshake. Oh, wait, I'll show you the horse first.